Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always,
it's Ben Vernell. Here we are in our Game of the Year episode part one. Don't know if we're going to have much to talk about at the end of this year. I don't know. What do you think, Adam Knox?
I think what a year it's been.
Yes.
What a year.
Yes.
Everyone's excited to look back at 2020.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's have a look at the year that was.
Yep.
Ah!
Oh, it's our Game of the Year. Here's the award for Best Dumpster Fire.
It's 2020. Here's the award for Year We Want to Start Over Again. Well, the implication being that we could change things if we started it over again, but I think the ball was already in motion by
yes.
the beginning of
Pretty funny.
Could we start it over again? Because I just want to experience it all fresh.
Honestly, I would do it differently.
Would you?
Yeah, I reckon there's some things I'd do differently. Like beyond the obvious time travel stuff of like, I'm going to invest in Zoom and all that sort of thing.
Oh, okay, right,
I'd have the fucking money to get any big return on my investment. But like, I'd take out a loan, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could fucking take out a loan. I'd steal some money.
Sure, you'd rob a bank in January.
Yeah, and then go like, can I buy stocks in cash?
Yeah.
They'd be like, well, these notes are stolen. They have numbers on them and we know what numbers
They're
got taken.
They're covered in that blue ink that explodes when you run out of the bank.
So if I were to start 2020 over again, I would spend it in jail and it wouldn't be any different.
I'd take out a loan in someone else's name because I found out at the end of 2020 how easy that is to do.
Yeah.
Because someone stole my identity. That's a true story.
Yes.
But we are here doing our look back at 2020, our Game of the Year episode part one. We are doing things a little bit differently this year.
Have you guys been here before? No? Okay, we do things a little bit differently here. We're going to show you our menu of games of the year right at the start, and then we'll take you through a degustation menu of each game of the year.
You can tell me your favorite games of the year. I'll just remember it. I won't even write it down. That's how good this place is.
Nothing better than a way to doing that. Now, have you guys been here before? And like, say there's five of you, four of you have, and one of you's like, no. And then the way to just going like, well, everyone else at your table seems like a complete dumb fuck who won't be able to explain this to you. So I'm now going to go through the process of eating at a restaurant
for
just
exactly,
this one holdout who's never been to this restaurant before, so I have to assume doesn't know how to order and eat.
It's crazy that the people who work at the finest restaurants don't seem to have ever been to another restaurant and realize that, oh, this is how everywhere works. Right.
It's not bad. It's not a bad business model to just assume, no, we're the only one. Yeah. We should start every episode of this like, just assuming you guys have never listened to a podcast before, so what's basically going to happen is you're going to hear voices in your head. Now, you're not having a psychotic episode. This isn't happening live in front of you. This was recorded in the past. Mm. We've spent roughly an hour trying to be funny and informative, and you're going to consume that information, and then it's in your library and you can listen to it whenever you want.
And that's if you take the whole amount of content in, over time you'll be able to develop a solid enough picture of these people that you could, if you wanted to, steal their identity with the information contained within. It literally would be from that, I would imagine.
Yeah, or you feel like you know them well enough that you could constantly harass them over Instagram and demand that they send you a photo of their girlfriend.
Oh,
something else
that's
happened to me recently. Yeah.
Just a girlfriend.
Just a girlfriend. Right, here you go, Carmen Electra.
Yeah, there's Kristen Stewart. Fuck you.
We request that you don't leave any minor feedback on iTunes as a review.
Unless it's positive.
Unless it's positive.
Give us a good review on Yelp.
Yeah.
We're a restaurant too. We've got for each of the video games we'll be giving you, we've got fantastic movie pairings to go with them.
But in the past we've done a Game of the Year episode. We've each written a top five and we've kind of gone around the horn. And then if there's a bit of overlap, we might kind of stop and one of us would go, oh, I actually had this number two.
We'd stop and go, why did you say my game? Yeah. And we don't edit those bits in, but we scream at each other for hours.
I was going to pick The Last of Us. How could you have known that I was going to do that?
Yeah, we do a bit of wrestling. And the winner gets to have that game in their list and then the loser has to pick something else to go in at number two.
My trick is to come in fully oiled up so no one can get a hold of me and scream, Half-Life! Of course it's Half-Life.
But this year, we figured that there was going to be a fair bit of crossover in our games, and rather than doing it in the way that we normally would, we're gonna each just kind of go through our lists up the top of this episode pretty quickly, and then we're going to go just into a deeper discussion of the games of the year with some little categories and awards that we've come up with. So we're putting less focus on our individual top fives and just kind of having more of a chat of the overall year because, there were this year a lot of big heavy hitters that had been in development for a long time, people very excited for a very long time, kind of all came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people were trying to get them out of the door before the generation ended.
Exactly,
which worked for most of them, and also Cyberpunk came out.
Yeah, I mean, even the ones that it worked for got some interesting responses to them. So,
right,
yeah.
It feels like Last of Us, Indiana Jones style, got under the door, managed to grab the hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cyberpunk got under the door, went to grab the hat, and the door came down and amputated it.
Yeah, I want a refund on this hat, please.
tried to grab the hat out from under the door, but like a badger bit onto its arm and he was like waving it around, getting stuck in all the other traps because it was scared by
the
badger.
But then he just sort of like went through the door anyway.
That's what I was going to say. Went to grab the hat.
His pants fell off.
Door slammed shut, cut the arm off, but then the hat clipped back through the door anyway. So
he picked up
no
that,
arm, but whatever.
Picked up that little golden idol, but then it like hovered in the air still and there was a second one there as well. Tried to call his plane to get away, but it like exploded on the side of a river.
The golden idol had a big dick and big tits and he's like, whoa, what the fuck, bro?
Yeah,
that's sick, dude.
Yeah. And I mean, like, some people found that funny enough to not mind all of those bugs, but...
Do you want to just go around one by one to prove that we mean it, that we don't care about our game of the years and say what, not that we don't care, but that it's not the focus.
It's not the focus.
And one by one say what our full on number one top game of the year is.
Let's do our lists one by one.
Okay.
Okay, I
think we do our lists.
Okay, well, after still, you, Tommy.
All right. Number five for me. Crash Bandicoot 4.
Whoa!
That's why we're not focusing on it.
I will say, I'll get to my honourables in a minute, but like fifth place for me could have been, like I went back and forth between about six games that could have been five. Because the four artistic masterpieces and then a fifth one that I just enjoyed a lot, had a lot of fun with it. Love platformers, this is a great platformer. Number four, Kentucky Route Zero.
Oof.
Number three, Last of Us 2.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes.
And number one, Persona 5 Royal. Whoa. And I based my ordering on personal enjoyment.
Yeah.
Trying to focus
interesting
less
metric.
On artistic kind of technical achievement.
Yeah.
And what I think is like technically the best made and the amount of pleasure I got out of them. My honourable.
We'll get to those. Like, we're doing some categories too. I don't know if we mentioned that. So we'll kind of rank and rate things based on different stuff later.
Yes.
And my honourable mentions tied sixth place. Any one of these could have been in there instead of Crash Bandicoot 4. Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Pikmin 3, Animal Crossing, and then the rest of my honourables, Doom Eternal, Hades, Resident Evil 3, Tony Hawk 1 and 2, Astro's Playroom, Paper Mario, and Carry On.
Carry On Camping.
And special mention to the Oculus Rift.
Oh, yes.
Had a great end of the year with that.
Yes. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit later in one of the categories, probably. Yeah. I've got 10, but I guess I'll do my five and the rest are sort of like you, Tommy, equal six almost.
Mm-hmm.
Five, Cyberpunk 2077.
Mm.
Four, Final Fantasy VII Remake. Three, Crusader Kings 3, a game that no one else... on this podcast played. A few people in our group did and got super deep into and will probably come up again in one of the categories. Number two, The Last of Us 2. And number one, Kentucky Route Zero, TV edition is
that's the technical like one that we played with all of them together.
No, my one on my list is specifically just chapter 2. The bit where you run around as the dog.
Yes.
Or the cat.
I don't think you played it, mate. That happened chapter 5 and it's a cat.
Fake fan.
The bit in Kentucky where you root the zero.
I think that it's worth noting too, just mentioning that there'll probably be some spoilers that we won't flag in some bits for some of these games.
We're not going to hold back. Yeah. On the game of the year, I don't think we...
Because it'll be pertinent to what we think of them, obviously, especially with stuff like The Last of Us, to talk about the story.
Totally. And we will clearly flag, we're about to go deep on this game and it'll be the next 20 minutes or so.
The thing that reminded you of that was... Whoa, we'd better not let people know there's a cat in Kentucky Route Zero.
It comes out of nowhere.
It does, very surprising. It really does, yeah.
Like a cat is prone to.
So my other games, I got Ghost Runner on this list. Really, really enjoyed that.
Gotta play that.
Yeah, it's super fun, tight gameplay. Tony Hawk, loved it. Can't fault that as a remake. Game of Thrones. Ghost of Tsushima.
GOT.
GOT.
Greatest of time.
Yes.
Grand of Theft Auto.
And Half-Life Alyx. Oh, and sorry, Astro's Playroom was also cut off this screenshot.
Cool.
Screenshot?
I took a screenshot of my Google Doc.
Oh, my God. What a bizarre...
I'm going boomer. Yeah. I'm going boomer from now on.
A lot of emojis on that list as well. They're like, wow, the fuck?
Yeah.
How do you know how to use these better than me?
Tommy had to edit out all the key touch sounds that I still have on my phone.
Ben made us open his phone again twice. Yeah. And he turned the volume up real loud.
Number one game of 2020. A drunk minion telling Joe Biden to suck it.
Yes.
Donald Duck saying, sometimes you do, some friends aren't really friends. a word we said just before made me realize as well, first category, word of the year. Congratulations to Prone on winning.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the official Macquarie Dictionary selection for new...
Yeah,
even
word.
Though it's been around forever.
What?
In video games specifically.
Yeah.
But Tommy finding out that the word prone exists.
Yes.
It's a big year for me. It's a very educational year, you know. Yeah. People say that games rot your brain. Well, I beg to differ. They're educational. I think, you know, is this Last of Us 2 or Mario Teaches Typing? Because I'm having a fucking educational... I'm having a bit of edutainment right now. Right here.
Device to education. Mario teaches typing.
Yeah.
That's where I learned all my time. I've only got a top 5 because, number 5 as well could have been a bunch of other games, but this one was just a little better. And all the others I didn't feel strongly enough about to even write down as mentions, you know? But so number 5 kind of, it's okay. Doom Eternal.
Yep. Mm.
Number 4, Last of Us Part 2. Number 3, Astro's Playroom. Number 2, Kentucky Route Zero. And number 1, confidence is a preference known for the habitual voyeur of what is known as Half-Life.
Very good.
Oh, yeah, baby. I thought of that before. That's why I was like, let's go say our top names. top games immediately. And I fucked it up when I said it too. I read a different word. But Half-Life Alyx is my favorite.
And I'm just going to read this for posterity. Our Patreon group, we had a big poll in their game of the year. And the top 5, look, the number 1 was a landslide.
Because it was only vote for your favourite, right?
Vote for your favourite, vote once, counting down from 5, Persona 5 Royal, FF7 Remake, Ghost of Tsushima, Animal Crossing New Horizons, a game that we have not mentioned yet, or did you mention it, Tommy?
It's in my honourable, it's a tied 6th place and was, at one point I had it as number 5.
Yeah, right. Number 1 was The Last of Us Part 2 by a massive, massive margin.
That I feel like that happened a lot with polls that I've seen around too. Or Ghost of Tsushima has been very popular as well.
Well, that took the Game Awards fan vote in a potentially toxic manner.
Well, that's the thing. I think that from what I've seen, and it's okay not to like The Last of Us.
Yeah.
But, the people who didn't like The Last of Us tended to go to Ghost of Tsushima under, for some reason.
Which, I guess because it's like...
It's a lot more straightforward.
A straightforward AAA game, not a lot to criticize about it. Not a lot of revolutionary stuff in it, but a good game.
Yeah.
A safe pick.
I feel like of the websites and stuff I've seen doing their game of the year, it's either been Last of Us 2 or Hades.
Yes.
Two opposite Hades ends of the spectrum where it's like technical achievement or just pure fun.
Yes.
Much smaller scale game, but undeniably a lot of fun, very rewarding.
Mm.
Just two completely different types of game.
It feels like it's the Parasite of games.
Yeah. Right.
It's like... You know, sort of the underdog in the big AAA world, even though it's like a big production that's beyond most indie stuff. But still, you know, like it, none of us have really played it that much, right?
God, I would love Bong Joon-ho to write and direct a video game. That would be awesome.
Fuck. That'd be pretty cool.
I've played it a bit. I played it for a few hours, which for a roguelite is, but apparently not enough to get, you know, what it's really about because... Yeah, people are raving about it. People are saying the writing's really good, which I did find charming.
Yeah.
But didn't find a lot of depth in it. But I guess, you know, it changes.
I think it builds, is the impression. Yeah.
So I really,
it. We'll talk about it a bit more in a category coming up.
Yes.
In this capacity.
Yeah.
I really like it, but a game of that style really has a hard time cracking my all-time top five because it's missing a couple of the key things that really make me fall in love with a game.
Mm.
Even though it is really fun and... Yeah, I'm going away next week, so I'll probably put a bit of time into it then. Good little one to pick up for an hour, but yeah.
Because it's Switch. Did it get released on PS?
It's PC, and I think it's, it was PC and Switch at launch, I think.
Yeah.
And I believe it's on the other consoles now.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I think it was just PC for a while.
Yeah, well, I played it in early access PC.
Because by the time it came to Switch, by the time it got, I think it got announced in like an indie direct or something, and then put up on the store that day.
Yeah.
And there were already people going, this game rules. This is great that this is on Switch.
Yeah. I think it was on the Epic store for like a year.
That makes sense.
And then it was early access Steam, then released on PC, Switch. And I'm not even sure if it's on the consoles, but
we're not the Hades people.
No.
If you want some Hades coverage at the end of the year here, there's plenty of places you can go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want our specific brand of coverage, then you've come to the right place.
That's right.
We've got that.
Yep. Slightly less informed than everyone else.
Yep.
Well, we do things a little bit differently around here. We haven't heard of half of the ingredients of food, and we're not going to use them. What's beef? Every other restaurant's doing a lot of beef, are they? Yeah. Well, whatever. We've not even tried beef, really.
Yeah, not really for us.
Yeah. I smelled it once.
I tried some beef back before they finished it off. Before it was fully cooked.
I patted a cow.
Yeah, you're right. We do things a little differently here. So now let's get into our categories for games of the year. And the first cab off the rank, craziest shit that happened in 2020.
Yes.
That's our personal spin on games journalism, baby.
Pretty fair title for something as well. We'll go through the competitive. I think for these ones, we're going to pick one. As a group that wins each of the categories.
Yeah, we'll talk it out and we'll pick one.
We'll pick what the winner of each award is. So the nominees at this point, and we can add them if we think of them. Craziest shit that happened in 2020. Cyberpunk 2077's release and delisting.
Mm-hmm.
The Halo Infinite delay,
which
pales in comparison to the Cyberpunk one. The Halo people must be so happy.
Totally. But when it happened, it was
nuts.
What the fuck are they doing? They fucked themselves. That's it. Maybe, sorry, not to deviate as we're reading out the nominees, but I wonder if the way that Cyberpunk has been received after it's been released will change people's reactions in the future to things inevitably being delayed. Because now there is, I don't think there's ever been such a clear thing of like, this is what happens when stuff's just not ready. But I think more than likely people will forget very quickly.
I've never seen a broken game be reported on by the BBC before.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it's crazy. Halo Infinite delay. New consoles actually coming out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
E3 basically dying.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Epic and Apple having a big fight.
Oh, that's right.
And the coronavirus.
Hmm. I think Cyberpunk is crazier than the coronavirus, honestly.
Because we knew pandemics have happened before.
Yeah.
But Cyberpunk is...
Pandemics happen once every 100 years. Cyberpunk is just unique.
It's
a perfect storm.
I mean, a lot of those are... like under the umbrella of the coronavirus.
Yes.
True. And that obvious, that's a joke one. I'm going to delete it.
No.
Let's seriously consider.
I think that COVID wins.
You literally did delete it from the Google Doc.
Yeah, it's gone.
I watched that happen live on my screen.
Regret in action.
I feel like we can get rid of Halo Infinite too, because as crazy as that was, and the fact that the Series X and S launched without a game.
Yes.
Like, almost, I think literally there isn't a game that you can only play on those Xboxes.
Yeah, and that's something that's never happened before.
I think so.
Like having it actually a unique launch game for a console, yeah.
Totally. Even the last time it happened, the last launch of the PS4 and the Xbox One, a lot of the games there were cross-generation too. Mm. So it's not completely bizarre, and Microsoft like pitched their consoles very much as like, hey, these are an upgrade.
Yes.
You know, they were the same as the One X and stuff, or closer to that than a brand new generation, where they're like,
yeah,
everything works still. It's all backwards compatibility. These are the new ones for now. Mm-hmm. Presumably we'll do more new ones in the future. These are PC boxes, like people have been planning to have.
Yeah, phones. Yeah, yeah, or phones. Like Apple is not launching a new app every time they release a phone.
So, but the fact that Halo Infinite was their big game for it, that it got the manner in which it got delayed too, where like
the Sonic movie style of like, this looks too bad for us to want to play it.
Totally. And then they were like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
We think so too, but we were trying to get it ready. So,
and it was so close as well, and they had it packaged in that big presentation they did.
It's on the back of all the boxes of an Xbox if you were able to find one. Like, there's a big fucking Master Chief standing there.
Yeah.
So it is pretty nuts, but especially with the context of Cyberpunk coming out afterwards, it's clearly the right decision.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem to have impacted them too much because Xboxes are all sold out everywhere.
Can't get them,
I'm going to get rid of that one too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Halo Infinite, we'll see you next year maybe.
Yep.
I think Epic and Apple having that big fight is also one that can go.
Yeah, it feels like all the sort of interesting consumer stuff or like industry stuff has sort of now centered around the Cyberpunk stuff, which is, and it's more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right,
I feel like there's more implications for how the industry should operate because of this Cyberpunk fiasco. The Epic and Apple stuff is like important, but it's not the winner.
No, and I think it's interesting from the point of view of like, as everything moves more and more digital, like we're so close to things only being digital now. Mm-hmm. Both consoles have a version that doesn't accept discs.
Right.
So the conversation around like, well, what's right and wrong with storefronts that are locked in?
Mm-hmm.
How come people are being mad at Apple when they're not being mad at Sony, who do the same practices that are being discussed here, which is, you know, take a cut and have it be closed and all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if you want to say, is this the craziest thing that happened? Ultimately, it's two companies just both wanting to make the most amount of money that they can.
Right.
Which isn't crazy.
It's the most normal thing to happen in 2020.
It's the most normal thing in the world. Yeah. Yeah. It's just only weird because they happen to be butting up against each other. But
and like Epic had that big campaign that really tried to mobilize their players and convince them in potentially a manipulative way to sort of become their champions.
To be like, hey, we're the heroes here fighting for free, whatever. And like, well, okay, the Epic Game Store is going to be the same at some point. You've got your own platform.
Right. Totally. That's and like, maybe yes, or you know, you are legitimately fighting for the benefits of consumers on one hand, but on the other hand, you're also fighting for, like you said, Tommy, your own profit margin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just the manner in which it happened with like the sort of like the attitude that Epic had of like, yeah, fuck Apple, 1984, they're 1984.
Yeah, yes.
And then Apple being like, all right, well, fuck off. They're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. I guess there's been two big stories in this category that have resulted in a storefront being like, get off our platform.
Right.
And if you're not going to play by our rules, fuck off.
Totally. Yeah. And Epic asked for it.
Yeah.
Whereas CD Projekt Red did not.
Yeah.
Which makes it more... we'll get to... Because, look, I think Cyberpunk, for me, is the winner.
It feels like it's transforming how video games are perceived, both by gamers and industry people and people who just read the news now.
The fact that... like, the way it happened also quickly, the way that... It seems pretty clear to me that CD Projekt Red literally did hide deliberately the quality of those things that they've said afterwards, like, Sony and Microsoft let us on the store because we said we'd fix it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we didn't.
Yep.
Like,
it's like telling people that, you know, maybe some people that play games a lot or some people that don't play as much, like telling them that you've been playing Cyberpunk and the immediate response is, oh, is it completely fucked?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you'd never have that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a big enough game that people that are maybe only vaguely interested know about, they're like, oh, I've been playing Last of Us 2. oh, is it sick? Like, you know, how is it?
Yeah.
It's like you never have that conversation where it's like the story that everyone, even outside of games, knows about.
There's a big drill going off if you can't hear.
I wonder if you can hear it.
I doubt you can.
Yeah.
Well, that was why we had a weird reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason we paused for a second is because someone turned on a big drill for 2 seconds.
Talking about Cyberpunk, is my brain crashing as I'm talking about it? But yeah, the fact that that's the narrative now, yeah. and it is a shame because it's really hard to tell what's actually underneath there, and I wonder because it has been, and it just keeps going even since we talked about it last week.
Yeah,
there's been 4 or 5 more developments in how fucked it is, and it feels like it's going to be such a long time before anyone can really just talk about at large whether it's fun to play or whether it's good to play.
And before that, it was like it's meant to be coming out in April, and then it gets delayed to September. Yeah. Then they're like, nah, November. And then in November, they're like, actually 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
And then it comes out, and it's as broken as it is, especially on, you know, the base consoles.
Yep.
It's the most fucked release of a video game on its own, probably, that I can sort of remember.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And
it is.
Especially with that high profile. And then they're like, okay, get a refund. And Sony are like, what? Yeah. You didn't fucking say this to it, but all right, we'll give people refunds, which means your game is faulty, which means it's no longer available for purchase.
Which I don't know that they would have done if CD Projekt Red hadn't also said, they kind of let us slip through the cracks with the approval process and the quality assurance. Like, I feel like that is an element of it as well.
Totally. Their communication to people afterwards have been like, yeah, we knew it was fucked, and also you can ask for your money back.
Yeah, and Sony kind of just didn't even bother to check. They did it on good faith.
And CD Projekt didn't bother to check with them if refunds were okay. Yeah. So then they're like, all right, well, we're not going to bother to check with you that it's we're going to just delist it.
Yeah.
Apparently they had no idea that was coming.
Yeah.
As well, all these shops are allowing refunds of physical copies in a way that they don't normally.
Yeah.
It's really nuts, but that drill sounds so funny. If you can't hear it picking up on the mics, it's like a real wet loud fart.
It is, yeah.
Yes.
It's really brutal.
It sucks that this is happening.
It's always fucking something in this apartment block.
It's either someone screaming and then gurgling, and then you can't hear anything afterwards, thankfully. But then you hear the sound of chopping and acid. But
there's always like some kind of work going on here, and nothing in the building ever seems to really get better in any way, and I reckon it's the building managers just doing some just hooking up mates
standing in an empty room just turning on a drill every now and again.
I think so.
Digging a hole and then filling the hole again.
Well, it's like there's always people here fucking drilling and fucking around with the cords in the car park, but it's like my intercom has been broken for months, and I think all the intercoms in the building just don't work. You know, it's like, that's not getting fixed.
No.
Well, it's maybe
the guy down there fixing a light bulb.
Maybe that's what they're hammering and drilling.
It's
now
complex.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
It's probably a lot similar to what's happening in CG Projekt Red's offices. Interesting. I read today they released figures of sales, and they were like, oh, we've had 13 million sales of the game after refunds.
Is that definitely after refunds?
Yes, yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
That's a lot of sales. And I feel like, you know, this is something we've talked about a lot. The gamer mentality or psyche is so easily, they so easily move on, or they're so easily appeased because all they really want is a fun game to play. And I've been reading a lot of people in our group being like, yeah, I started playing a week after it launched on the base consoles on a PS4, and I've got version 1.05 and it's fine.
Sure.
So like, if they can get it to a point that it's playable after a week, then in a month maybe we've forgotten all about this.
Exactly.
I don't know.
People have different expectations for what they want, like, because I think that was the surprising thing about the game for me, more than like it launched fucked, and I think I expected that to a degree because this company has done that every time, but not to this extent. But then also it fell short of what I thought it was going to be, not in the way of like, I want to walk around eating noodles, but just like, the writing in this isn't as good as the old stuff, and like, this looks weirdly shitty and stuff like that, where like there's not much to do, and like it's all coming up in weird ways. So like, yeah, I think it was just sort of disappointing to me anyway, slightly. But the whole thing around it, and even if a lot of it is, you know, loud minority people, you know.
The squeaky wheel?
You know what, yeah, squeaky exactly. Wheels? You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. I mean, I think...
I used the word minority and I'm like...
I think this will be probably the first time on the show that we ever have a game that... We'll be talking about this at the end of 2021 wrap as well, for sure.
100%.
That upgrade will be out, for fuck's sake.
I thought you said your intercom didn't work,
No, it goes off, but I just can't talk on the other end of
go
it.
Off, King. Go answer. Yeah. It went off, you go off.
This wouldn't be a 2020 episode if something didn't fuck up the whole
exactly. flow of things. I thought this was going to be fine, but then...
we'll do it over Zoom.
We'll see you in a minute, Tommy.
We'll do...
Tommy, all right, dumbest Tommy cunt of the year goes to Tommy Dasilo. Well, let's... Yeah, okay. I'm going to put a little underline under Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Let's just keep going while he's running again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think... The new console is actually coming out is, I guess, a positive.
Definitely.
Crazy thing.
Yeah. Because I feel like I was definitely skeptical that they were actually going to come out.
Because by the time COVID kicked off, they still hadn't announced the PS5.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was crazily delayed. And whether, I think there was a lot of speculation initially that Microsoft and Sony were playing a game of chicken of who was going to announce the price first and who was going to respond.
And that stuff didn't happen until September, so they probably were.
Yeah, they would have had to be. And because of the last generation, who announced their stuff first got kind of fucked because Xbox went first and Sony responded and won everyone over because it was the not being able to sell used game or secondhand games.
It was the secondhand games thing. It was all the TV stuff.
The always online stuff, which now is just an accepted fact of life.
Right. It's the same as almost the, you know how Apple takes the charger out and then Samsung's like, you idiots, we're taking the charger out too.
Totally, yeah.
So they, I think, were doing that chicken thing, but the fact that we... saw the Series X for the first time December of last year and didn't see the PS5 until July? Something like that?
Yeah, that was that big event that we live streamed.
And yeah.
There was all the game reveals, the box reveal.
So for it not existing to being in some people's homes within the space of what a fucked year, it's nuts that there are new consoles.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the craziest pieces of shit that's happened this year, in my
opinion.
What
were you guys talking about?
Who cares, Tommy? You weren't here.
We were ranking the best intercoms.
Yeah, that was nuts. An entire... Yeah, us getting to September and being like, when the fuck are we going to find anything out?
We already said that, Tommy, while you were outside.
Yeah, I know. I was listening in. I'm copying you because I thought it was so cool.
We hadn't said that specific thing either. I'm just joshing around.
Similarly kind of running parallel to that, Nintendo basically just going dark for the year.
Yeah, sitting
it
out.
You know, they were already at the start of the year getting pretty late and doing a direct where... You know, it was like, what are they doing this year? Mm-hmm. Then COVID hits and it's like, oh, okay, they're just clearly they don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And then just them putting up a trailer in the middle of the night on Twitter and being this is out in a month.
Yeah.
They were kind of just doing the same thing of look, we don't know. We don't want to get fucked over by having to push things back. So we'll just chuck out a release date with a month's notice when we're sure we can actually do it.
Yeah. It's kind of weird to look back and go oh man, it's great. What does Nintendo have for the rest of 2020 other than Animal Crossing? And the answer being nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. And it didn't really matter.
No. Like Paper Mario, I guess, and Hyrule Warriors came out.
Right.
They're the two I can think of.
But and Animal all the Crossing. Mario 35 stuff.
That sold really big.
And then Animal Crossing, kept selling really well. So
it didn't really matter to them.
Yeah. So and I think it lends some weight to the idea that they're putting out a new Switch revision next year. That's the rumor, and I reckon it's true.
They said someone said that they consider the Switch, someone from Nintendo, consider the Switch to be in the midpoint of its life cycle.
Okay.
This happened within the past few days.
When they say that too, I think that means that a new one is going to come out soon, because whenever a new console comes out, they're like, yeah, we'll keep the 3DS around for a long time.
Yeah.
But then no, you won't.
No, you mean 3 years.
And sort of.
It's
But the new console's actually coming out was really crazy, but also those wheels would have been so emotional at the start of this year that they would have had to do it anyway.
Yeah,
so
the fact that it happened, the scarcity of stock is kind of the fucked thing.
Yeah.
But... they came out.
that drill. I don't.
It's
closer. I hope the mics can pick it up because it sounds like it's a giant bee like trapped in a wall.
You'd think, you know, some kind of like note in your letterbox that this is happening would be nice, but what do I know? I've never managed a building.
We're demolishing the apartment block today, so.
I mean, also, the three people have never worked a day in their life being like, that drill sounds crazy. What's that loud sound?
The drill that I have that I use to assemble IKEA furniture isn't as loud as that.
And the last one other than Cyberpunk is E3 basically fully dying this year.
Yeah.
I think it was like already the talk was for the last couple of years, like, is this still relevant? What's this about? Mm-hmm. And then COVID happening and it having to not take place. And then there not even really being an online version.
And no one really seeming to give a fuck.
Nah, and it was fine. Yeah. Exactly. Everyone kind of, all the companies did their own thing and everyone was like, ah, oh, the internet exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fine. Okay, cool. See you later, E3. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I do wonder though, because like, I think the thing we're sort of starting to realize as things, you know, start to reopen up here in Melbourne in the last couple of months is that, like, yeah, in the middle of the year it was pretty easy to go like, maybe this is just done forever. Mm. And then things kind of come back and just how quickly things sort of go back to what they were before in a lot of cases without really thinking like, hey, maybe this is an opportunity for a bit of a soft reset and it not really functioning that way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that'll be the end of it forever. Mm. Like, I think, you know, it probably won't be back again next year because it's in the States, which seems to be getting worse and worse. But, I don't know. Maybe by the time it is safe to do it again, it kind of revitalizes people. Mm. Because it was a shame. It you know, like we've said on the show before, it losing its relevance is a shame because it was always really fun when you did have that centralized week of this thing that you're really interested in and all this big news happens at the same time. It was exciting. It was like a music festival or a film festival or something where it's like all contained in the one spot where, you know, getting up early to watch the presentation and see all the new trailers drop. It was fun. So it will be a shame if it doesn't exist in some form of just having that one week where you're discussing all this stuff at the same time.
I mean, there will be something called E3 next year, probably even, like, even if it's online, and there will be a real life E3 thing again. But I think just the, in terms of what it was,
this year
very much to me is like that thing's gone.
Yeah.
There will be a brand called E3 that will try and do something, but I can't imagine companies wanting to focus all their efforts towards this one point of the year again.
Right.
Because that is always such a dream for them, they say, is to like get their E3 demo ready, to get that presentation done in time. Takes work away from putting the actual game together often.
Right.
And I can't, now that there's no need to do that.
And now that Sony have started doing their state of plays more and more this year, like they're getting into the ecosystem of just like, we'll just do these when we want.
The fact that you can announce and release a console in the same year.
Yeah.
That like, without of course E3. You can, exactly. Yeah. Of course you can do that with any game as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I reckon that this year is a definitive kind of end to that thing that you were talking about, Tommy, of like there'll be something called E3.
Yep.
But you know, it's not what E3 was.
I could see our mate Jeff Keighley, like doing, because for him the Game Awards would be, I would think, very lucrative because there's so much sponsorship, there's a lot of buy-in.
It's like all that.
It's all sponsorship. Yeah. And if he can figure out a way to do it twice a year, 6 months apart, and not cannibalize from the existing one that he does.
Sure.
Like, and you know, he has credibility. He does, you know, he legitimately makes a good show.
Yeah.
So if he took over E3 or replaced it, that could be something.
Sure, it'll just be piecemeal like that, though. That'll be one thing. Sony will do its own thing. Nintendo will do its own thing. Mm. Individual game studios will do their announcements when they're ready. And that's fine as well.
Yeah, you know? I think it's fine. I'm not... Yeah, I was never as huge into E3 as you, Tommy, but I think...
I definitely enjoyed it in that same way, but like, it's just not relevant in the way that we consume our information anymore. So it disappearing this year isn't even the craziest thing because it was already on the decline.
Yeah. I think that would have happened more incrementally over the next like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we all kind of agree going in.
Yes.
Tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, that the Cyberpunk 2077 thing is the craziest shit that happened this year in terms of video games. The real winner is the coronavirus. But
what
do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely.
It's the most insane launch of a game that I can ever remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for something that was so high profile, so hyped up. Like, there are those games where it comes out and it's like, this is about school shooting and they take it down.
Right, yeah. Sure.
You know, but this is like a, you know, in quotes, real game.
Yeah.
And for something that, like, you kind of assumed that all the delays meant that, like, this will come out and it might be a bit buggy. But I remember us all talking, like, mid-year of, like, oh, yes, you know, I wonder what's going to be on our end of year list, because there's been some real heavy hitters. We'll probably all end up having the same list, right? This, and then Cyberpunk's almost definitely going to be on there for all of us. But then it's like having this kind of launch, and I personally am finding it so hard to see through all the muck of everything else to the actual game underneath.
Yeah. Speaking of, so congratulations, Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes.
You're the craziest shit that happened this year. And speaking of the consoles coming out and a game that I did not expect to be on lists.
Yep.
I think it's worth having a chat about our first big game of the year that we'll all have a chat about.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
Astro's Playroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a fucking fun game.
Yep. Yeah. Fun little experience. Not, you know, just a couple of hours, but just a joy from start to finish.
The most maybe focused on just being a good time game that I played all year. Just straight forward, start to finish. We are trying to pack as much fun shit in here as we can.
The luxury that you get of being from being a pack-in, right? Like having to worry about like, oh, we got to make this a bit longer and then you maybe pad it. It's weird. It's a tech demo, basically. Right. It's showing off what the, you know, you buy this console, it's already on there. Here's what the console can do. That's what it's there to show you, kind of how it all works and everything and the haptic triggers and all that sort of stuff. But then for it to just actually be, so fun at the same time.
Because the tech demo thing, I think, undersells its creativity.
Yes.
It shouldn't be a surprise that a game that's focused almost, I think entirely on how to do creative gameplay is good. Like, that shouldn't be surprising at all. Like, it's a tech demo, but it's made by people who really want to use that tech in creative, interesting ways.
Totally. And, like, the Astro's rescue mission was still kind of a tech demo off the back of an actual tech demo, you know, like
that's
kind of what they've done with these games, but fuck, it works. And you forget, I forgot at least, that was the point of the game, is to show off this controller, because the way that they incorporate all these little different things that they want to show off is in an actual game sense, and then it doesn't let it wear out its welcome. Yeah.
It's the Wii. It is Wii Sports. It's Wii Sports to the PlayStation 5. It's a pack-in. It's there to show you, like, hey, this is how this works. But then it's so fun that, you can imagine other examples of this where people just go have 3 seconds with it and go, oh, yeah, I get it. Cool, the triggers feel like that. Or, here's how the remote works. But then Wii Sports ended up being this massive, like, cultural phenomenon, like party game thing that just so many people got into, regardless of whether they were into games or not. And Astro's is doing a slightly different thing where it's not a party game. It's just a really satisfying, I love 3D platformers. This is a great one. It's a solid, solid game that, you're right. Like, it's now been kind of three in a row of Astro as basically a tech demo that, I really hope that they're working on a fully fledged version of this game that, you know, looks a little more impressive and has more depth to it, but still using all these little functions. Like, I hopefully now there's the kind of recognition of that character that they've put him in enough things that they consider it worth doing a full adventure of him, because that would be fucking great.
If everyone who's buying a PS5 is seeing this game, regardless of if they spend much time with it. Not, and again, there's not even much time to spend with it because it is quite short. But the way they pack in all the little nods to old PlayStation games with the little characters acting them out in the world, all the PlayStation shit that you buy, like having a really well-crafted, highly detailed model of like an iToy camera is such a weird, dumb thing to have in it. And like Nintendo levels of fucking masturbatory self-congratulation, you know?
Which they're just at the level of being able to look back on as of this last gen. Like, you realize how many of those things that they're looking back on in the game, like Horizon Zero Dawn and God of War. I mean, God of War's been around a little while longer, but like a lot of these things were solidified just in the last 5 years.
Right.
Where finally now they are this legendary legacy brand that can start to do mm-hmm. those things that, yeah, a company like Nintendo has always done so well. And when it's done right, it's so satisfying.
And it's done so right here because it's like endearing and it's like just the right level of, there are a few of them where you go, wait, what the fuck's that? And then you go, oh, right, The Order 1886.
Yes.
Fucking hell. And like, but there's like Castlevania and like all the...
Yeah,
really old shit. There's and yeah, the newer stuff. But then it creates its own things, which are like the level where there's the GPU is singing to you about how it's a GPU.
Yes,
is so nice and fun yes. and charming and stupid and such a silly idea that works really well. And kind of the whole game is that it's like really ridiculous things to suggest, but then they're done so well that it's just a constant, just fun. Ride for the whole time.
I think I really like it because there's not even a pretense of a story either.
No.
Yeah.
This is, and like I said, yeah, like this is a game focused on gameplay, which for a 3D platformer, like I don't always love 3D platformers, but when your sole purpose is to make it enjoyable and make it a fun tactile experience with this new controller, you're more likely to nail it for me, I think. Maybe they do a full game with some sort of story and give Astro a bit of a personality. Maybe that happens, and I guess we see if that's done well or not. But even just a longer game without a narrative would still be fun because it's all about the gameplay.
Totally. And if it's maintaining this level of like, most of the stuff that's in there is like a gimmick pretty much.
Yeah.
But they do it well enough and then do it for just short enough that you don't get the sense of like, oh yeah, this is just a gimmicky thing. Because like even in Wii Sports, like the tennis wasn't very fun. You know, like it didn't work that well. But everything in here kind of works and it doesn't try to make more of a big deal of itself than it is. It just hangs out.
I've gone back to the bit where you're in the monkey suit and you're gripping on the rocks a bunch of times because it just feels great with the haptic triggers, that like the grip and then being on the zip and
everything.
The
zipper,
it feels really, really good. So more of that stuff. And the way the rain feels on you when you're running around, like, a full game of that stuff really, really, really expanded on would be awesome. Or if they combine it with... you know, if Sony has another VR headset on the way, if they do a sequel where they're combining the haptic trigger stuff and how well they did VR in the first one with, you know, a slightly higher quality headset would be amazing.
They could go any direction from here and I'd be so up for whatever they do. Because, like, even that Sackboy game that came out, you know, you wouldn't think that... the Sackboy from Little Big Planet doing a Mario 3D world would be great, but I still haven't gotten around to that. But by all accounts, it's pretty good.
And I mean, when this first got announced, I kind of didn't think I'd give a shit about it because I was like, well, I liked that other one because it was in VR. I don't really know that I give too much of a fuck about this character in this world if it's missing that like incredible feeling of your head like being in the level. But they pulled it off. These guys are good at what they do.
Totally. And I didn't expect it to be on a list because knowing it was like 2 hours long or whatever it is, but it made me smile for the percentage of the time that I was playing it, probably more than any other game this year.
Also, that's what you want when you buy a new console. So often it's like if you don't get the right game for it or whatever.
Yeah.
Your experience, when you turn something on for the first time, you really want to be wowed and you want to feel like you're getting this like great different experience. And the fact that like, pretty much everyone I imagine would have the same experience with the PS5. You turn it on and this is the first thing that you do it. It's putting a big smile on your face and it's showing you how the controller feels and the different stuff it can do. It's just such a great way of making you feel like the first time you turn this thing on, like, oh yeah, this was a good purchase.
Yes.
This is fucking awesome, which,
sick. Congratulations, Astro's Playroom, for being talked about on our podcast. The ultimate award.
Yes.
The next category we'd like to move into.
Mm-hmm.
Please welcome to introduce it, Jessica Biel and her sister, Sarah Biel.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Oh, I don't know why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
This one's kind of weird because some of these on here, it's called Games We Probably Like But Didn't Play Enough.
Yeah.
Because I think it's worth mentioning that, like, we're aware that we didn't get to these games as much, but they're probably great. Some of them on here, though, some of us, like one of us has played, but the others haven't.
Right.
Yep.
So I'll just read the list that we've got here. Persona 5 Royal.
Mm-hmm.
Hades.
Mm-hmm.
Nioh 2.
Mm.
Crusader Kings 3,
mm-hmm.
Yakuza 7, or Like a Dragon.
Oh, yep.
Ori and the Will of the Wisps,
mm-hmm.
Bugsnax, and Genshin Impact.
Oh, yep. Sure.
That's a sort of, so like, for me, you've both played Persona 5 Royal, and I know that I'd like it because Persona 5 is great, but the idea that you've got to do the whole thing again, like, it's such a weird way to put out new content for an existing game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think that's why I've only played about 10 hours of it, which is still a lot. Like, there are probably games...
That's five Astro's playrooms.
Exactly. There are games on my list that I have not played for that long, but I'm not angry at it. I didn't feel like it was bad value or anything like that. You know, I'm excited to have the time to go through it again. It's like reading a Choose Your Own Adventure twice, except if it's a good book.
Yeah.
The
Dungeon of Dark Despair. Oh, I walk left. Oh, no, a chasm. That sucks. Guess I'll turn back to the page I kept my finger on.
Yep. It is weird to know when they do these kinds of upgrades, like, who this is for.
Mm.
Like, if you're someone like me who never got through the original version of it, well, then all these little extra stuff and quality of life improvements are like wasted on you.
Right.
Right? Yes. And if you're someone that has played it, that all those extra little things would be very impressive and interesting to, yeah, you have to do all the shit at the start again.
Right.
And even like that's the bit that I played of the original one. And, you know, I found that a bit of a drag.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, that's right. This game takes so fucking long to let you start doing like what you want to do.
Mm.
And it just, like, if it's fresh enough, because I played the whole original version and it's, I need to forget it first.
Yes, exactly.
I need to wait a couple more years until I'm ready to be in love again.
Yes, get back on the horse.
Yeah.
Get back on the anime horse.
So it's come out so soon after that original one too.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, I found out after I finished it, you can accidentally miss that last chapter.
Yeah.
You have to do very specific things in the game that are on a time limit that if you don't do them, you just... Because I got to the end and was like, oh, I wonder what that stuff that they added in is. And it's like, oh, right, I totally didn't see any of that.
That is so crazy as well.
That's
the
so
fact
weird.
That you, who did play the new version for 100 hours, didn't see the new and have to play it again one day if you want to see that stuff.
I just basically did end up playing the original version of it more or less.
Yeah, but...
Who's that redhead over there? I'm just going to ignore her.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, by all accounts, it is...
good.
It's a good game.
It's a good game, a good product.
It's the only version of that game to play now as well.
Yeah.
Yes, very true.
But just a bizarre thing to bring out rather than DLC.
Mm.
Yeah. Ori and the Will of the Wisps probably would have been in my five had I finished it. I put a bit of time into it at the start of the year and then kind of fell off it for, a few reasons. I was playing it right before COVID and everything hit, and then I just, for whatever reason, I just couldn't be fucked engaging with it again. But I love it. The art, everything about it is so great. Both of those games, if you haven't put any time into them, they're on Game Pass. They're both on Switch now, I think.
The first one
definitely is. I think the second one ended up coming out this year on Switch. But they're great Metroidvania platformers. Incredible music, incredible art direction. Yeah, really, really great world.
I'm stunned at myself that I haven't played them because it's exactly the sort of thing that I would like probably.
Yeah.
But especially the second one, I don't want to play before playing the first one.
Yeah.
So getting around to that first one's just still taking me a while. But
yeah,
they look fucking beautiful.
Yeah. I played it as much as I could. I think what happens to me with Metroidvania games is that I get to a point where I can't figure out what to do next. I backtrack across the entire map. And I refuse to go look up a guide because I have too much pride. And I just fell off it. But I echo everything that you've said about the visuals, the music, the characterization. It's very well directed as well. Like it's a sick game.
The music that they've done in a way where they've got this score that is sort of in the background the whole time that you're playing that then will ramp up in intensity when you get into an encounter and then dip back, this kind of like live orchestral score is like so well done and so technically impressive that they managed to get that to work.
Mm.
Like it, you do feel like you're playing a Pixar movie where, because like when you're heading into a thing, the music just kind of naturally swells.
That's not a bad fight thing. Yeah, it seems like something I'll probably plug some time into both of them when I fucking remember.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, You've played some Bugsnax too, Tommy, and that sounded good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Fun yeah. little game. Yeah. Like, yeah, nice, chill. Talked about it just the other week, so there's not too much more to say. But, yeah, very, again, pleasant art direction.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you're not going to come up against a wall. You're not going to have a bit that you can't get past. You can just kind of like cruise around and chill. Like, yeah, something like Pokemon Snap is probably the perfect comparison.
Right. Like a little, like snack food.
Yeah.
Like a little video game snack, like a snack.
Yeah.
I just wanted to publicly and officially swallow my pride and admit that I'm interested in Bugsnax.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yakuza Like a Dragon. If I hadn't have gotten a PS5, I think I would have got it at launch, but I'm going to hold out and wait for the PS5 version of it.
Same. That's like early March, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So I think we're both hanging out for that. But you've already gone in, Ben. And
yeah. I've played probably, 10 or 15 hours of it. But in the back of my mind, knowing these games are long, I played through, I think, all of Yakuza 0, played a bit of 6, and played like 30 hours of Judgment and, you know, was only like a third of the way through.
Yeah.
And knowing that Cyberpunk was coming up, which I expected to put a lot of time into, I just was like, well, I'm putting this to one side, but was enjoying it heaps as I was playing it.
Yep.
Yeah. All of the Yakuza games are coming to Game Pass soon too, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, Zero's on there. I think Zero only came out on the Xbox this year.
I think so. And Kiwami 1 and 2 are on there already. Right.
Yeah.
And then I think it's 3 through 6 are coming out soon. And then 7.
Zero
like that.
I definitely want to finish off because, having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's just for me, but I should play those Neo games. They're getting updates on the PS5 early next year. But I love the Souls games. I've just about finished Demons again now.
Wow.
And that type of game just really plugs into some part of my brain that is wanting some sort of...
It's wanting a challenge.
Yeah.
Wanting a big
something
sword
to just focus on. Yes. Wanting something to make me focus. I'm doing forms at the moment to find out if I have something that is to do with focus.
Bad eyesight.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It takes a long time to fill out those forms because I keep... I have to get someone else to do it. But yeah, Neo 2 came out this year. It looks great, but I'm, again, same as Yakuza are waiting for the updates on PS5.
Right.
Yep.
Why not at this point?
Mm-hmm.
And then another couple of Ben games here.
Yes.
So Crusader Kings 3, I don't think that's coming up in our big talks.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us again why we should be playing Crusader Kings 3.
Go off, Kings 3. It's
a way better game. Yes. You gotta have you go through like a whole bloodline of the boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
a lot of male friendship.
Yeah,
exploration. It's like if you've ever wanted to be in the political intrigue world of a Game of Thrones or something like that, it's exactly that. It's a simulation of medieval politics. Dynasties, you go from generation to generation.
We do dynasty a little bit different around here. Oh. You want to have a look at our lunchesty menu? Oh. What about breakfastesty, brunchesty, dessertesty? None of these are going to turn into
afternoonesty.
There you go. Yeah, that's it. Tea. Yes. I thought that I knew there was some. Well done.
But yeah, it's that. It's civilization, but it's like micro level management of every aspect of it. You have raised kids, you kill kids.
Whoa.
There's a lot of kid stuff in there. But and it's this huge world map set in these different eras of history. If you're a history nerd and you like fucking around with that kind of stuff, it's just a great game for it. And a great time sink too.
Is it very spreadsheety or is it presented in a more graphical way?
It's very, very graphical, yeah.
Cool.
It's like there's a lot of stats and shit like that, but you're sort of clicking around these like portraits of these different rulers, and there's a lot of shit going on. There's a lot of military stuff as well. It's not just like talking to people. It's got that Civ stuff of like, get your army and fucking get it over here and ally with this person. If you're allied, then they might come and fight this war from the other angle. Like it's very convoluted and involved, but it's very fun. Like it's hard to convey how fun it is as well.
Just seeing your decisions pay off or not over time, I guess is, it's another, I really wanted to put, but just there's something about the amount of time that it seems like it would take that similar Persona was off-putting in a way, but it is on Game Pass on PC as well. So
yep.
Pretty cool. And then Also, Genshin Impact you played, and man, I hope that drill isn't coming up that much on this episode, because if it is...
Oh, it's coming up. People can't hear it, but it's coming up.
Yeah.
As long as people can't hear it, then it's fine.
Yeah. I think it would be less annoying to just be able to hear it constantly rather than hear us frequently refer to something and be distracted by something that they can't hear.
Well, yeah, as long as the microphones aren't getting it, but... What did you think of Genshin Impact?
It's great, and I didn't expect it to explode the way it did, because it just became hugely popular, massively like in there with a Fortnite or something like that, for just hugely played cross-platform, lots of different people from different countries playing it. But I didn't go back into it. I had my time, and it was more of a curiosity for me, but it is hugely popular.
Well, and it's one of those ones that they're adding updates to again and again over time. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys, I have really bad diarrhea at the moment. That's what you'll be able to hear. If you can hear
if
it
you can
in the...
Yeah. Like, I would be amazed if it's not audible on these.
Yeah, maybe it is slightly coming through.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, sorry, everyone.
Probably not. These mics are pretty, like...
directional.
You need to be hot on them.
It's the only thing that's happening in my skull.
Yeah, so loud in here.
If people can't hear, I did a gig the other night. There's a comedy show in Melbourne where you do two shows back to back. You do 7 and 8:30. And some people who'd bought tickets for the 7 also bought tickets to the 8:30, and were sitting up the front. And I don't know whether they thought it was going to be a different lineup, but it's the same lineup doing the same material.
Right.
And people kept coming out. I was on pretty late, but people kept coming out at the start and being like, "Oh, you're," because they were sitting up the front. "Oh, you're here again. Oh, well, I don't have any new material. You're just going to hear the same thing."
Yeah,
kind of interacting with them. And it was just so funny. Like, I came out and said to them, "I don't know who I feel worse for, you guys having to see the same show again, or everyone else in the room who's just booked tickets to a comedy show and has to see comedian after comedian just obsessing about two people."
Right.
Because it was just like that thing where it's like every comedian is referencing it and everyone else in the room is going, "I don't care.
Right.
Just do the fucking material." And that's kind of what this feels like. It's like people potentially listening going, "I can't hear the fucking drill."
Yeah.
Just talk about Genshin Impact for fuck's sake.
Yeah. I mean, but if they can hear the drill... Yeah. This is the drill episode.
At what point do we reveal that there is no drill? This is a huge bit.
What a great...
The drill bit.
That's why I cleared my throat, you cunt. I cleared my throat. Genshin Impact will have additions made.
He couldn't hear you clearing
made.
Your throat, to be fair, over the sound of...
this fucking drill. Should we... I'm going to yell shut up there.
Well, they can't stop working.
Yes, they can. Well, neither can we.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's more updates to Genshin Impact, because apparently, like, at the end, it sort of just runs out
right.
of stuff to do.
Right.
Unless you want to pay. So,
yes.
It'll be around for a while, and it'll be. I did play the first, like, 10 minutes on my phone and found the voices very annoying.
Right.
So.
What kind of sound would you relate the voices to?
Like the grating, boring into your skull sound. Of someone doing what they think an anime character should sound like.
Yeah. I gotta find out what they're doing down there. If they if they're fixing the sauna that has been broken for the entire 3 years that I've lived here, then I'm gonna give this a pass.
Okay. No, if the sauna's not above you, is it?
The drilling's not happening above us.
Yeah, 100% is above
us. No, it's underneath us.
It's underneath.
It's right above where I am.
It's over there.
It's in the car park.
No.
Yeah.
They were up a ladder down there before.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to go kick that ladder. But yeah, I think maybe the, again, sort of the one that we've talked about it a bit, and none of us have really gone that far into it. You have a bit, but the response that Hades is getting from all the Game of the Year awards from other people.
Huge.
Yeah. Massive.
These kinds of games, they typically, people that like that style of game get really into them, but they don't really make too much of a splash outside of that. But
Dead
for this
Cells.
To show up.
Dead Cells was the same thing for me, where I tried a bit of that and just couldn't do it.
Yeah. For this to end up on Game of the Year lists is huge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we'll all get into that at some point, maybe
probably,
over the...
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll take my Switch down for the holidays.
Right.
For Christmas, maybe give it a bit of a crack.
Down where?
You know where.
Well, it's down there. But I think speaking of games that we wish we'd played a bit more of, and something that we talked a lot about when it came out, and I think that a lot of people that listened to this felt like we had a pretty negative response to it, and we kind of did have a negative response
we did.
For it. We really only focused on the flaws that we could see in it, but maybe letting it galvanize a bit more and spending a bit more time with it, and then, you know, other stuff coming out since that is way more flawed made us potentially rethink and want to spend more time with Ghosts of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Not me. I think my opinion, I haven't gone back to it. Right. I want to try it out with like running well on a PS5 and all of that. I got probably 2/3 through because I opened up that third area. And
stopped. You didn't finish it.
No.
Wow.
I was bored.
Yeah.
You know, like, I did everything in that first part of the map.
Yep.
Most stuff, and then just started mainlining the story in the second, and at some point realized I didn't really care about the characters or the
story. I kind of just assumed you finished it but still weren't hot on it.
No, like I spent a long time with it but just really at some point forgot it existed, to be honest. Like it got overwritten in my brain by the state of the world. The fact that I was just feeling Assassin's Creed flat with it. But like you said, so many people have been so hot on it. It's also collecting a bunch of awards and especially like user voted things.
Yeah.
It was one of the ones that I re-downloaded on the PS5 just kind of out of interest to sort of dip in and sort of see how it ran on the PS5. And it looks beautiful. Mm. It runs at beautiful, smooth 60 frames. The world looks so good. The lighting looks so good. I really want to put. I only got up to the second area, and I was really liking it at the time. Again, I think I got swept up in focusing on the little quibbles that I had with it.
Yeah.
But I was really, really enjoying it, and I'm glad that I saved it to play on more powerful hardware, looking better. The only problem I'm having with it is that it's the combat mechanisms are such that it's gone from my brain.
Yeah,
and when I've gone back in, I'm having a hard time. Like I get into a conflict, I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this. And then I'm just getting destroyed because I cannot remember how to block and you know, parry and all that sort of stuff. So I need to, I don't know, I think I need to start a new save and do the tutorial and then just jump back into the current one because I can't get to grips with it.
I, as we all did, I had my quiggles with it initially.
Any wiggles?
A few wiggles, but I finished this game. I kind of assumed we all did. I guess it was a few months ago now. It's left my brain, but I found it very hard to come to grips with initially. The combat and the sort of camera stuff was just not what I was expecting. And I had, I think, very high expectations for the game. Love that setting in general.
Yeah.
And was hoping, for maybe something else from what we got. But by the end of it, I loved it. I couldn't stop playing it. I was clearing, I think I cleared the first couple of huge regions and I think ended up mainlining the story to just have that, you know, satisfaction. Mm. And like when I finished it, booted up Assassin's Creed Odyssey, like thinking, oh, I'll get more of this. This is, you know, and realizing, no, Ghost of Tsushima was this, but better. The combat is much more satisfying.
Yeah.
There is a lot more interesting visual sort of flourishes, that the wind at being your guiding sort of map marker thing was very creative and subtle. And going back to Assassin's Creed made me appreciate Ghost of Tsushima heaps more.
Yeah, jumping into Ghost of Tsushima after spending a bit of time with Cyberpunk, where my big complaint of it so far is that the world just feels a bit kind of dead and lacking in atmosphere to me. And then, going into this wind in the trees, these like abandoned villages and the night and running across a little lake on your horse and everything. Like it is, I think it's very easy to kind of, just focus on its flaws when you're playing it in isolation, but then
quite literally,
literally. But then when you go back to other things and you kind of realize all these things that it is doing really well, that it's easy to overlook when, you're just playing it by itself, but it's not doing anything super groundbreaking, but what it is doing, it's doing so well. Yeah.
I agree that it looks fucking incredible for sure. I think, there's nothing like that's flatly wrong with it. You know what I mean? I just didn't find that satisfaction in the combat, didn't find it in the story, didn't find it in the types of stuff you were doing in the open world bits. It just didn't quite hit for me in that way. So, the feeling I remember from it is boredom.
Yeah, you know? And I don't exactly know why it sort of increased in my mind as I played it, or improved in my mind. Mm. But it did. It just did. I think I came to accept maybe it more on its own level. And I think was expecting this like revolutionary combat and brand new. It's sure. And it's not anything new. It's just old stuff done really well.
Sure. I think. I don't think I had that expectation of it. But I realized that my opinion of it is below where other people's generally tends to be. So like, I want to go back to it on the PS5 as well.
It kind of really feels like it's on opposite ends of the scale of Cyberpunk, where I think in the lead up to this, it did. Because it's a Sony first party game and everything, like I think a lot of people were thinking like, oh, this is going to be unreal and, you know, this really amazing, like that, you know, I kind of felt like it was really going to rock my socks. And then at the end of the day, it for a lot of people, I think they're just finding it's a fun open world game. It's not shaking things up too much. But then the other scale of Cyberpunk is it is going for that a bit more. Mm. And at the moment, it seems to, for a lot of people, have bitten off a bit more than it can chew.
Yep.
But clearly with Ghost of Tsushima, they've gone, no, let's just focus in on this and just make this type of game as well as we can without needing to, you know, put in too much stuff that we think is going to, you know, really revolutionize or whatever.
Mm. I think that's fair. Yeah.
I really want to spend more time with it and finish it off in the new year.
Yeah.
It's a significant game that ended up on our talk about these games list.
Yes.
Because it was one of the big games of 2020.
Yeah.
2020 talkies.
Yes. Yeah. And even though parts of the discussion were interrupted by the sound of drills, it was still fun to talk about because sound is so important in multiple aspects of our lives.
Yes.
Including podcasting.
Yeah.
Where sound is the only thing that you get out of it.
Yep.
And so who better than podcasters to talk about which game had the best music of 2020? Mm. Not just sound. Should it be sound?
Sound design? Different,
I guess.
Music/sound design?
Look, we prepared to do music. A bonus sound design chat after we've done this.
Yeah,
category.
Maybe. Well, it's just because I assume this is Adam who's put this in here. In this
my
best
name
music
is Adam.
Category, he's put a title in here that, as far as I can remember, does not have music in it.
What are you talking about?
I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm saying I don't remember it as having any.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah.
Tony Hawk? Is that what you're talking? Do you mean Demon's Souls?
My soundbar's broken, I should say. Yeah, Demon's Souls. You're right, it does. But, you know, for me personally, and, you know, you've definitely played more of it than me, but...
It's the bosses have music.
Yeah, right.
That's the bit, and they've redone all of it in a way that kind of lines up with the big sort of orchestral, huge Dark Souls music, and I love it.
Right.
The Bloodborne especially had fantastic boss themes, and it really adds to the gravity of when you face a boss in the Souls games, where it's meant to be this big crescendo moment for gameplay where it really goes like, all right, fucking show me what you got, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And then for half of the bosses, it's like, this one is going to be really easy because you can just go to this corner and he doesn't know where you are. Mm. Fuck yeah, this is an old game now. This dumb, what's he called, the Colossus. There's a guy who has like a cannon that shoots bees and he's fucking
what?
Sucked. Yeah, he like shoots bugs out of it like a wooden barrel cannon.
Oh, wow.
Or am I thinking of Donkey Kong 64? It does have a, but yeah, I don't think it'll win, but I just want to, like, the redone music is so good in Demon's Souls to me. But yeah, I don't think it's the best music of the year necessarily.
Well, because there's sort of two different, within these lists that we've got here, there's sort of two categories, right? So you've got Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, which you could lump in with Fuser, where they've got great music, but it's licensed music.
Well, yeah,
it's music that already exists and someone has collated an awesome soundtrack of pre-existing songs.
And then it's almost like best use of music though, right?
Best soundtrack, right? Rather than best score.
Right. And well, like in Demon's Souls, the fact that there isn't music for a lot of it adds to when there is.
Yes, right.
So I think in terms of using music as... you know, what it's for, to create emotion, is done well in Demon's Souls through it being comfortable with using silence for a lot of the time.
But also, it falls into the category of remade music.
I think the themes themselves are kind of new.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember Demon's Souls, the original's music well enough, but I think it was like markedly different to okay. how this is doing it.
But it is a remake.
But it is a remake. And also, I don't think it beats out some of these others either, because so with Tony Hawk and Fuser, it's, yeah, pre-existing music.
Mm.
But the fact that they got all of that music back for Tony Hawk 1 and 2 and then added in new music that fits
yeah.
is pretty mm. impressive.
And even if you go back to like when that game first came out, the decision to go, let's spend the money on licensing stuff instead of just right. getting an in-house guy to
yeah.
make some generic. Can you imagine that game? Would it have had the same? I mean, it's still fun to play. It doesn't change that. But would it have had the cultural the same, ubiquity yeah, if yeah. it was just like, you know, some guy solo in a room just yeah. making his own generic? I really don't think so. I think a big part of the impact is hearing those songs, because
yeah.
when it got announced, they chucked those songs in the trailer, and yeah, that was such a big part of why people were excited for the remake, was the announcement that like all the old music is back.
Well, so the thing that comes to mind is like Grand Theft Auto 2 and 3 and stuff. So like 3 had kind of licensed music, but it wasn't popular songs.
Mm. Yeah.
And then Vice City came along and had that 80s soundtrack.
Yeah, that's yep. right.
And that did kind of crank up the cultural relevance of the Grand Theft Auto series.
Yep, yep.
Because it tapped into an extra thing.
Yeah. And then Tony you Hawk, get to like that, yeah. 5 where bands are making songs for that soundtrack. It's combo
they're
of licensed
it
music
all the time
and yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when the original Tony Hawk came out, the graphics are worse. There's less going on visually. Mm. So, and I think it's, we've talked about this before, music in art and in games especially really, really adds to the immersion, the emotional impact.
Yeah.
And even if that emotion is like, man, this is cool being a skater, it still, you know,
well,
is an impact.
Yeah, that was a big thing of the original PlayStation, was that you could have that it had quality CDs. Music on yeah. it. So yeah. what better way to show that off, yeah.
And Tony Hawk 1 was one of the earlier examples of that, I'm pretty sure. Mm.
Right.
Like, Wipeout had some electronic music that was licensed, and that was a big deal. But, I mean, we can't judge the remake based on the impact of the original.
Yeah.
But I do think that the additional songs they've added
yeah.
to the remake fit, and that's impressive to be able to go like, here's this really fucking iconic playlist, especially from 2. All of those songons are still stamped in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And then they've added ones in there that don't seem out of place.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Totally agreed.
Pretty cool.
Then we got a couple other games here that are sort of in the same realm. Persona 5 and the Final Fantasy VII remake, Persona 5 Royal, I should say.
Yeah.
Royal has, yeah, this existing fantastic bunch of original songs that were made for Persona 5 and some new songs.
Mm.
And then, yeah, FF7 has a re-orchestration of, in my, like, my personal favorite game score of all time.
So yeah. I think Persona 5 Royal, yeah, it's got some new stuff in there, but mainly Persona 5's music was good.
Yes.
So I don't think it gets to...
I don't think it wins, but it's yeah.
probably it's my personal choice.
Right.
Love all the music in it. Getting up to a new world, like the thrill of getting up to a new world and going, oh, I'm going to hear a new theme.
Yep.
And there's not really too many games that I can think of off the top of my head where part of the excitement of getting up to a new bit is I'm going to hear some different shit. And yeah. if you want proof that it's my favorite soundtrack probably ever, they just announced
oh, yes.
that they're reprinting the soundtrack on vinyl yeah. and they're doing one for the regular one and one for Royal, and I bought them both.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I do, this is the only game soundtrack where I have listened to the tracks recreationally outside right. of the game and it's can get the same kind of enjoyment. They're
really
fantastic.
Fucking good.
Yeah. yeah.
I think just the fact that Royal doesn't build as much on the original as like a Final Fantasy VII remake does.
Yes.
Because I think the Final Fantasy VII remake maybe takes this.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah ultimately for the reorchestration and everything, it's so good.
It's fucking incredible, because those songs, to me as well, I know that music back to front.
Yes.
Because like you heard it a lot in the game, but then I've also just listened because it's really well written fucking music.
It's great music.
And there's so many like orchestrated versions on YouTube and shit. There's so many different versions of this that you can look up. And the ones that they made for the remake are the best that I've heard of these very, like, as an example, the thing you were saying of getting excited to hear the new thing.
I wonder, I think I was going to say this as well.
When you fight the Airbuster boss?
Yes.
Yeah.
yes. But also in the future sequels to this.
Right. That's fucking nuts.
I'm thinking about songs and themes for areas in Final Fantasy VII that I'm excited to hear reorchestrated.
Right.
That's you know, that doesn't happen with other games.
Well, should we talk about this? Let's also talk about this game in a little bit of a wider context too, because this is one that was in all of our top fives?
It wasn't in mine.
Oh, okay, right.
But I do think that... we can do that in a minute, because I just want to say with the Airbuster theme, with the music in particular, it's the first time that boss theme kicks in from the original, even though you fought bosses before. And then that same boss theme happens for other bosses, but not the exact same orchestration as from that fight.
Right.
And they do that multiple times, so they have the same theme pop up in different orchestrations or what's that? There's another fucking music term that I'm
Compositions.
Looking for. Compositions.
Yes. Mm. And in different contexts in the game. Yeah, right.
That's so
smart. So
cleverly done and really keeps the momentum of the game building throughout the run of the thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they got the fucking Sephiroth bullshit one-winged angel theme in this one, which is crazy because it speaks to... I mean, we'll talk about more about the remake, but, like, it's a really good version of that too.
Yes.
Mm. All the music is done, like... It's all, remakes of an old thing, but it's done very fresh and very cleverly for that game.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more in a second because I think maybe that takes this, but it's worth mentioning.
I found myself going back to areas just to walk around, just to hear the themes again.
Before we crown it, which I think we will, you mentioned the music from Ori before.
Yep.
That's done.
Beautiful.
Sounded pretty cool.
Yep.
Astro's Playroom has some really fucking good music.
Yep. Yeah.
Especially that level with the singing is really cool.
Yeah. But the fact that they can make a song about an SSD, this is charming and fun and kind of like, it's good music. It's kind of fun electropop music.
It's perfect platformer music.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tony. Animal Crossing.
Oh, sure.
The music in. Yeah. And especially the basically quote unquote end of the game. Is KK Slider coming and playing a little performance on the island.
That's when true.
You get your island good enough for him to visit, and after that moment you see the credits. The game, you know, you play it forever, but you do get credits when you watch him play, so technically a little music performance is the kind of
the finale.
Apex of the game, the finale of the game.
The noise that KK Slider makes, he goes, that?
Yeah.
Fuck, it's cool.
Yeah.
He's a badass, man. Fuser is great. It's all licensed, but it's so perfectly incorporated into the concept of that game.
Yes.
All the points they pick for your mixing are exactly right.
Mm.
They change the speeds and the pitches and stuff of the songs perfectly.
Yeah.
It is so well done.
Yes.
It's incredible.
And the soundtrack is also well chosen.
Yeah.
I think... maybe this isn't part of it, but the cost of the DLC maybe takes some of that away.
It's a little egregious, but also they're songs.
Yeah, and they're licensing it, so that's maybe just what it's got to be, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That isn't the fault of the game necessarily. But
it's if you're getting Cardi B in there and stuff, you've presumably got to pay a fair bit for that to happen. So
If Spotify's not going to pay artists, someone has to. I guess.
It is honestly the Guitar Hero and shit. It's the only time I've bought music in the last decade.
Yeah, right.
Tony Hawk's good, but probably doesn't win. Because Final Fantasy VII Remake, for the way that they've ridden the line between nostalgia and freshness, is really, really well done in their music.
Mm.
And for 90% of that game as a whole.
Yeah, yes. And it speaks to how... just how iconic those tunes are in general, that I've only played the first third of the original about a year and a half ago. And even with that, like a year and a half, like hearing these new versions of them, I was like, oh, wow, this is sick. You know what I mean? Like they already feel nostalgic and iconic to me, even though I didn't even play it all that long ago.
Mm. They've got really well-written little riffs and shit.
Yeah.
That like little... It's like a fucking pop song, you know? You can put the first little notes there and everyone go like, you're a nerd. Fuck you.
And because of the way the game is presented, I thought I was going to really miss... I love the weird kind of... synthy music in the original when you've won a battle and you get in the little screen where your XP is going up I would sit on that screen for a while just to, you know, hear a bit more of that music. And it, you know, you obviously, because this game is going for a bit more of a, you know, realistic thing, you're not getting that screen.
Mm-hmm.
But then working a way to put that in where you just for no good in-world reason whatsoever, you have Barrett just going, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. It's like, well, what... In this world, what is that? Like, yeah, what is that a reference to? Like, why is he singing that? But it's like, what a great kind of concession to still just work out a way to just hit that nostalgia button in a way that is funny and endearing and charming. Having, and
those, like, little jukeboxes that are around and stuff where you can find the old records of the old songs.
Managing to hit the nostalgia button in a charming and effective way is, yeah, like you said before, Nox, exactly what this entire game does.
Until the last, like, hour, I reckon.
Well, it the last hour, it's doing something different, I guess.
It's crazy. So, yeah. Also, so congratulations, Final Fantasy VII Remake. You got best music of the
year. Best music, FF7R.
And so, it's also, yeah, but on both of your Game of the Year lists.
Yes.
It's my number two. Yeah, it came out right as lockdown hit. And, yeah, it really did help me through that first one. It was, I adored this game. I loved all of it. It basically stops at around the point that I stopped playing the original. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of the issues that people potentially have with it and the things that people found weird or whatever as they come into the end of this remake and what that means for the future. That didn't really resonate with me. I just had such a fun time playing it. The combat is so good. It looked incredible. It sounded incredible. It was fun to play. The progression of it was great. I thought it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
I adored it.
It speaks to the quality of this year in games that, yeah, a game that I've been looking forward to since a mere whisper of it appeared in media.
Right.
Is only number four on my list. But I fucking loved it. I didn't have the issues that you had with the end, Nox, and a lot of people did have, to be fair. But I just sort of waved them away because I enjoyed the preceding 90% of the game so much.
Totally. I this would be the hanging around. It could have been number five instead of Doom. But I think just the there was some of the side stuff was a little flat as well.
Right.
You know, like the fact that it was 35-ish hours and it's focusing in the first, like, what, three or four of the original game. Mm. It isn't as stretched out as that makes it sound like it could be.
Yeah.
But it is still a little
bit. There's a bit of padding.
There's a bit
of backtracking and stuff.
There's some stuff.
Like, oh,
yeah.
This is a shame.
Especially towards the, like, back half where someone's like, oh, now this little fucking guy's stolen the key. Go get him.
Yeah, that was annoying. Right, that was very annoying.
Yeah, the sewers, I think specifically because the sewers are kind of just nothing. You know, they're boring to run around in. And a bit of backtracking in one of the, like, little underground paths. But that there's that underground path. It's the bit with, like, the hand puzzles.
Yeah.
The score, the music, which was an original song, is just so sick. I just loved being there.
Yeah. It looks fucking incredible the whole time. Even with the, like, weird texture issues and whatever that sort of happened that seemed like they were a technical fault or something.
And some of the matte backgrounds, which just were like, you know, when you're running around turning on the lamps in the underneath the plate and the background is just like a sort of low-res picture of a skyline.
If you look at it, it's flat.
Strangely.
I didn't really I noticed, but I didn't really notice the texture stuff too much. And it's funny because in the lead up to this, I remember it was delayed a lot, and then it was didn't they stop it and completely restart it at one point? And
we
were sort of saying this will never come out, and maybe when it does, it'll be fucking dog shit and it won't work. And then it comes out, and it's, you know, it's got its foibles, but again, it is in
we
the
were
way
talking that, about the wrong game that end with the number seven.
Totally. Yeah, it all was like, came together and worked playing the demo, and we were all like, fuck, this is going to be good.
Yeah, it's so detailed. Like, yeah, we talk about Cyberpunk, like, being a little ambitious or just not having the time that the devs needed to do that detail work.
Right.
It's there in Final Fantasy VII Remake, and whether it's because there's, you know, smaller levels and static and it's linear in certain ways, but it just looks beautiful. It's so detailed. It's the art style is translated from the original blocky stuff to, you know, contemporary gaming perfectly.
Totally. And I think the visuals are mostly good. The texture stuff is so minor, but it's worth noting because there were a few times where I was like, that door is just a gray block. That's what
I mean. Right,
yeah.
And stuff like that. But then the animation is really great and the voice acting especially is really, really well done. For
as
much as they've turned up the anime style of Final Fantasy VII, which I don't think was really there that much in the original, but is definitely present here, they do a very good job with the voice acting, in the English version at least, of really great voice acting, which is part of the thing I'm saying with it feeling stretched out, because you get so into the story, even though you know it, the bits where it hits the pause button for a little bit do drag a touch. But then the gameplay during that is fucking good.
Yes. Yeah.
The game is really, really fun. They figured out how to do this like real-time combat thing that they've been trying to do since like 13.
Yeah, yes, true.
And it fucking works now.
It's so fun.
I was so skeptical of that when it was announced, but fuck me dead if it isn't just... I didn't like it in 15 and I don't really know what this is doing different, but it just really clicked for me.
Because 13 felt like all autopilot from memory.
Yeah.
15 was kind of halfway. But this, you're making choices, you're deciding what to do, you're actually participating in the fight.
Yeah, and switching between the characters and sort of having that like mid-game pause of like choosing this special ability, the magic or the materia integration is really fun.
The bosses and a bunch of the normal enemies do challenge you as well.
Yeah.
Like... I was so surprised by how good the battle stuff in this was.
Yep.
Even from the demo, I didn't really like it in the demo.
And I didn't like the voice acting in the demo, or I was concerned about it. I thought it was way too anime. But yeah, I totally agreed. The main game, the voice acting and the characterization and the writing and all of that stuff, it's like over the top, but in a really fun way.
It's stylistic rather than dodgy or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the very end gets muddy and confusing and isn't pulled off. Even for what they're trying to do, I don't think they pull that off, really. I'm so interested to see how the next one or two or however many they're planning to do recontextualize that ending bit, because it is very much an ellipsis at the end of the game, so it's hard to...
That was a shame, and it does... I agree with you in that it does get... Those last couple of fights are just very anime over the top, where...
They're so out of
three
place.
Three different coloured spectres. This is a... This is feels a bit uncreative when you've had all this cool mech shit and everything going on.
Yeah.
From the story perspective too, it kind of comes out of nowhere. Mm. The characters react to it really strangely, but I think it could be like fixed in retrospect.
And the idea of this all, these next installments presumably coming out on and being developed for the 5.
I suppose
with how good this looked on the 4 is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me want to see those other ones heaps, and I'm really interested to see if they do, because I'd be more hesitant to get on board them going like, oh no, we're just still doing the regular remake,
right?
Because they change up what's happening so much in that last chunk of this game that...
Well, and they introduced those ghosty things and stuff, so
they're
purposefully adding a new element to this story for, I guess, people who played it before, or I'm not really sure why they chose to. I guess just because as creators, they didn't want to just do literally the same thing again.
Yeah, it makes it seem like this is meant to be more of a sequel than a remake, because the
events of the original, because the ghosts are basically, if you're trying to alter what's already happened, they come in and stop you, which seems to be referencing the fact that you're playing through this again, these events that have already happened at some stage.
It makes my interpretation of it was that it's like some interdimensional shit.
Because
the way that Sephiroth is as a character in this one, and there's not a fucking name in the world that makes me feel like more of a cunt than saying the word Sephiroth.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like an absolute fucking dork every time. But it seems as though the Sephiroth that's in this knows about what happened in the last one.
Oh, and the same with the Aerith.
Right. By at some point she like ticks over, and so I want to know how much they're going to, because at this point, fuck it up. Do some crazy shit for the next two and make this a sequel.
Right. I want it the same level of divergence as we got in this one, in the sequels. I want to be able to experience the stuff that I love from the original in a high definition, beautiful, redone way. And I want some surprises. And I feel like that's kind of what they're going for.
I don't think they walked that line well enough in this one.
Right.
Because, it just... It doesn't go hard enough in either direction that it either quite feels complete or satisfying.
Right. I think...
Does that make sense?
This is the one property, maybe, or one of the few, where I'm happy to be pandered to. And I'll absolutely forgive the sharp edges that aren't polished off here, because... I just like Final Fantasy VII.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's.
And that's fair enough.
I'll cop to that.
The stuff with the weird ghosty things and like the off the rails nature of the ending could definitely no longer be an, in quotes, issue with this game if they justify it in the coming games. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If they do nothing to address that stuff and just continue with the remake, then the end of the second one is like, and now we're doing another weird thing. I think that'll make me bothered.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still one of the games we talked about this year.
Yeah, well, I reckon that is going to be us wrapping up part one of our chat of the games of 2020. We will be back next week.
Should we? We'll just quickly mention what we did this time at the end.
Yes, a little recap.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We talked about three of our games of the year were Astro's Playroom, Ghost of Tsushima, I nearly said Game of Thrones because it's GOT written down here, and Final Fantasy VII Remake. And the craziest shit that happened this year was Cyberpunk 2077 existing in the manner that it does.
Yes.
The game we probably liked to play but didn't play enough was Hades. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the best music was Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yep.
Yes.
There you go. It's all wrapped up in a neat little package. Nice. Why'd we spend an hour and a half doing that?
We will be back next week with more conversations about the games of this year. So rest assured, if one of your favorites didn't get mentioned, it's probably coming up next week. Mm-hmm. But let us know on Facebook what you think of these games that we brought up, and any of your personal faves and stuff. We will see you for part two next week. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to the socials, the Patreon, where you can get a bonus episode every week, the Let's Plays on YouTube, all of that stuff, the premium episodes on Bandcamp. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time, and as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals. I said at the end, not consistently throughout the entire thing.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.